Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 1 Podcast.
Thursday, the 26th day of January, as we started off here. A lot to deal with this afternoon, and we will get to that in a minute. Let's share a few headlines from overnight, and it was a big game in Tuscaloosa last night as Alabama overcame a 10-point deficit. Finally beating Mississippi State. Yay. To continue its winning ways in the SEC. Alabama, the number two team in the country. And tonight we get Tennessee and UConn again. This was the definitive game of the 90s and there afterwards with Pat Summitt and Geno. And Kelly Harper, who joined us yesterday, knows all about this, having been a star at Tennessee. And now she will see the man who tried to supplant her coach as the greatest in the game. And 40 years ago this afternoon in Alabama, news began to break that Paul Bryant had passed away at the age of 69. Six national championships at Bama, legendary status. Today, most of that still holds up. Fourth most wins in FBS history, 14 SEC champions, six national championships, only surpassed by one man, and that who currently sits in the same vicinity that he once did, Paul Bryant. And we will spend a lot of time this afternoon remembering that time. I realize many of you were not around, but we will talk to some who were and some, of course, who were not. Craig Stevenson has done perhaps the best job I have seen over these 40 years in encapsulating that time from the moment that Coach Bryant stepped down in December of 82 to his death 37 years later. Craig, a reporter for AL.com. Craig, many thanks. Appreciate it. And I know you've done a lot of really amazing projects, but talk a little bit about tackling this project from many different angles, as you have been doing recently. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's something I've always been fascinated by, not just obviously Bryant's retirement and death, but that entire 1982 season. Really a watershed time in the SEC. Not only do you have the end of Bryant, but you have the ascension of Auburn and them finally beating Alabama after so many years, Tennessee finally beating Alabama after so many years. And obviously that all dovetails with the end of Bryant's career. So I decided, this fall I wanted to kind of tackle that from a few different angles, as you mentioned, one of which was, when did people start to think that it was getting near the end for Bryant? And that really kind of started, not to flatter you too much, but it did start with some of the reporting that you did with the way that Alabama was starting to get beat regularly and recruiting by Auburn and other people. Don Kausler, your colleague at the Birmingham News, wrote a column in November of that year where basically said, look, if Bryant's going to retire, he needs to say so now because the program is starting to suffer by his indecision. And obviously that was stirring up a hornet's nest, as you might imagine. Then, of course, the ascension of Auburn, them winning the Iron Bowl, finally beating Alabama on the famous bow over the top play. And then the end of Bryant, not just his death again, but his decision to step down, what led to all that and the reaction to it and just kind of that period between when he decided he was leaving and when he ultimately did retire and die, 4 weeks later.
Craig, it's almost moot to even ask you this question, considering we know what happened to Bryant on this day 40 years ago. But what caused him prior to that, somewhere in November into December, what caused him to decide, okay, I am going to finally step down? Because he had been thinking about it for a long time, but he kept resisting.
That's true, yeah. And one conversation I had for my story was with Dr. Gayla McCulloch, who is a well-known surgeon in the state of Alabama, played for Bryant in the mid-60s, and by the end of Bryant's life had really become his confidant on medical issues and some other things. And, you know, Dr. McCulloch told me, look, by the end of his tenure, he was physically not up to the job anymore in terms of just his, you know, of course he had had issues, you know, he had smoked for his entire adult life. We all know that he had issues with alcohol at one time or another, although I think by that time he had stopped drinking. But just the wear and tear on his body, you know, people in those days lived hard, as you and I know, you know, either our parents or grandparents' generation. People lived hard in those days, and he was certainly no exception. When you couple that all with the stress of big-time college football, and I think in addition to his health, just I think that he was beginning to have trouble relating to the modern-day athlete. You know, he famously told Ed Hinton of the Atlanta paper when he spoke to him very late in that 1982 season, I just can't coach him anymore. And I think that that comes for everybody at some point soon, but obviously for it to come for Bryant, you know, who everybody just assumed was going to live forever and coach forever, it was a huge, huge deal.
And as you have pointed out in your – and I would, there's a series of pieces that Craig has done that you can find on AL.com. But he was under attack for the first time really in the state of Alabama, not by anyone but by one of his protégés. Stop me if this sounds familiar. Yeah. Pat Dye was starting to make a lot of noise at Auburn.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, a lot of people think, and I'm, you know, I don't know that he ever said this publicly, or, you know, of course you had Pat Dye on hundreds of times over the years. And, you know, a lot of people think if Dye had held off for a year or two, he would have been the next coach at Alabama. And, you know, obviously when he went to Auburn, that was never going to happen. But you're right. He just, you know, he started to out Bryant by the end of his career. And, you know, of course, that's we're seeing that now, as you mentioned with Nick Saban. He's Kirby Smart starting to out Saban. And, you know, I think obviously the big event was Bo Jackson choosing to sign with Auburn. And a lot of people, I think, dropped the ball on that. I don't know that you can entirely you know, blame Bryant and his staff on that, but it certainly did occur. But even then, you know, it was only fair for people to start using Bryant's age against him. You know, Jackson was one, and Marcus Dupree, who was from Philadelphia, Mississippi, not too far from Tuscaloosa, was another one that, you know, had he come along 5 years early, probably would have played at Alabama, considering how things were going there. But, yeah, the ascension of Auburn and the decline of Bryant is certainly no coincidence.
You, and probably one of the more interesting stories that you wrote, you detail how Ray Perkins ended up succeeding Bryant. But I want to scoot ahead a little bit to this day 40 years ago. And, you know, I think it's one thing to see it on documentaries, and many of us have, or most of the audience has, but you dug pretty deep into how Alabama literally stood still on January 26, 1983. Tell us what you learned.
Yeah, and I'll say that I was 9 years old when all this happened, so I'm very, very, you know, I have memories of it, but not, you know, vivid, comprehensive memories of it. But yeah, it was, you know, I think that, you know, Perkins had taken over as head coach by that time, and the people around Bryant sort of cajoled him to stay on as AD, although Sam Bailey, who was his assistant AD, was doing a lot of the administrative tasks at that time. But he stayed on board and, you know, just kind of did the day-to-day mundane job of an AD when it's not football season. And, again, his players that had played for him went by to see him for the last few times, and or what ended up being the last time, to just kind of make their peace with him if they needed to do so, or just to thank him for what they what they did for him. And but on that the previous day, he had started having chest pains and checked himself into Druid City Hospital there in Tuscaloosa. And I guess it was later learned that he had two heart attacks, and the next day at 1:30 obviously died. And yeah, it was what you would expect in Alabama. You know, of course it was like the president had died. It's been a long time in this country. There's not many people who remember a president dying in office, but if you that certainly was the case in Alabama.
It was a big story nationally. I went back, Craig, and looked at some of the national publications, and it was still well chronicled. But in Alabama, there was live coverage of it. But you have to remember, in 1983, it wasn't like today. It was very archaic in some respects, but still, it was a cold winter day, and it was for a who's who of college football doesn't do justice to the names that walked in and out of that church in Tuscaloosa.
Right. Yeah. Every big name, that was Bryant's contemporary that was still living there. Obviously, hundreds of his former players and former assistant coaches. I think it was more than 500 in the church for the funeral and 5,000 at the gravesite in Birmingham at Elmwood Cemetery. And, of course, the funeral procession from Tuscaloosa to Birmingham. I know a lot of people have seen the footage of that. All the people stopped alongside the interstate holding up signs and just kind of paying their respects. I think it was a 400-car funeral procession. So, I can only imagine how long that took to pass by. But, that was a really, really vivid scene. Obviously, I read Birmingham News was an afternoon paper at the time, and, the Post-Herald being the morning paper. The Birmingham News stopped the press when they found out that Bryant had died at 1:30 and remade the paper to put out a quick edition. And that was something they had only done in the past when, the president died.
Amazing stuff. I would encourage all of you to check out Craig. I mean, Craig has done one of the most exhaustive look backs on this. He has done the most exhaustive look back that anybody has ever done. Craig, many thanks. Great job, and really appreciate you making time for us today.
All right, Paul. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Craig Stevenson joining us. We'll talk a little bit later with Keith Donovan, who is the de facto historian of this moment. He did a documentary many years later on Coach Bryant, as well as having written a number of books. We'll take a short break and get to your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Well, we'll go to Tennessee and talk to Drea Carter, Keith Donovan later on the Bryant anniversary, and Nikki Fargus later on the big game in Knoxville. We mentioned those who were around in 1983 and those who were too young. Eddie Conyers had just turned 90 in 1983, and he joins us now. Eddie?
Hey, Paul.
How are you, Eddie? Good to have you back.
My pleasure, buddy.
Pretty amazing as we were reflecting. What do you remember about that day, Eddie?
Paul, the night before, my wife and I were sitting watching television. The phone rings. I answered the phone. And as I remember, some lady from Birmingham, one of the Birmingham papers, I don't know why it was a lady, but I think it was. She said, we just had a report that Coach Mouse had taken to the hospital, and could you confirm that? And I can remember telling her, I like carrying on the joke about things, but I said, if this is a joke, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
She said, no, your name was listed as somebody to check with. And I told her, I said, well, man, what you need to do is call Sam Bailey and find out. But as soon as I hung up, I called Sam. And I said, Sam, the Birmingham paper's going to call you about Coach Mike going to the hospital. And he said, yeah, he's out there. I think he was at Jimmy Hinton's house.
Right,
I'm not
right.
sure.
That is correct.
And he said he had some problems, and they got up. But he said he's out there now, mad. So mad they won't let him have any cigarettes.
Eddie, I've never heard that before.
Well, my wife who works at the athletic department at that time, the next day we were talking about it, and I was at work. She called me. She said, "Hey, Coach Bryant is going to be okay." And this is kind of vague to me, but they're doing some kind of procedures that he'll be okay. Well, anyway, around 1:30, she called me back and said they just announced that Coach Bryant died. And Paul, there's just no way I can tell you the exact feeling. And quite frankly, it wasn't so much a feeling of sadness as it was maybe completeness. If that makes sense. I don't know. Obviously, I was sad, but I don't know. I remember walking out of the building. For some reason, I started walking towards the hospital. I don't know what in the heck I thought I'd have done. But anyway, I can just remember I just walked around for a while, and finally I came on back and just accepted it. It was quite traumatic, really.
Eddie, what you said is so interesting, because I remember working at the newspaper on that Tuesday night, and we saw the story, and I think my boss, I had to go out and do something. I had to go to Legion Field Wednesday morning, and he said, you know, go by, make sure you check on the Coach Bryant situation. And I called down there. I don't know who I talked to, and they said he was doing great. He was laughing and cutting up with people. And I remember I talked to Jerry Duncan one time, who said he had sold him a bond that morning. Jerry was his stockbroker, the former player at Alabama, which everyone knows Jerry. If he's sitting there thinking about his investment portfolio, he clearly wasn't thinking about anything other than getting out of the hospital.
Yeah, you're right. That was a word I had heard. And when I heard he died, it was just real sudden, obviously.
And I tell you what, help me. And this has been 40 years, so I could have the name wrong. But was it Linda Knowles, his receptionist?
Yeah,
I remember. On Thursday, after one of the services, I went by his office, and it was the eeriest thing I've ever seen. There was a, you know, he had this little box, his mailbox, and there was a message in there for him. And you start imagining, somebody called him, and now that, you know, obviously nobody would ever hear from him again. But I was talking to Linda. It was the eeriest thing. The lights were all off, and, you know, she was just, you know, barely holding up. And she said, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, maybe Tuesday morning, he had come in and had some soup at lunch and was going to go out and hit some golf balls or something. I mean, he clearly was, he was embracing his new world.
Oh, yeah. As Billy Varner, you know, his driver, would
sure.
take him out to the University golf course, and Billy would tee the ball up for him. Coach Bryant would hit him. He really loved playing the game of golf. I don't think he was really very proficient at it, but
no.
He really loved
it. I followed him at probably a year earlier at the Charlie Boswell tournament. I think Bob Hope had come in, and they let the media. And by the way, not that I'm a connoisseur of golf, but he didn't care one bit. He just swung, and he couldn't wait to swing and get back in the cart.
You're exactly right. He wasn't much of a golfer, but he's a hell of a football coach.
And I'm trying to remember. I think. It was the week of the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was in Los Angeles, And I believe that he was planning on going, Eddie, correct? I mean, you may remember this better. I mean, it's only been 40 years. I think he was planning on going to Vegas. Remember, one of the big hotels there had Coach Brian and I think Duffy Dougherty. They came out and entertained. I mean, not that Coach Brian needed to do this, but I think he and Duffy were coming out, and there was a private party watching the Super Bowl together, and Coach was going to be there and giving his thoughts on the game and whatever. So I mean, he was planning. He was keeping busy.
Oh yeah, very much so. He was very active. And mentioning Duffy, he had a great story. Maybe you've heard this. And he said that he retired from Michigan State, but his coaching on account of illness. He said the alumni got sick.
Yeah, I do remember that. But I'll never forget. I mean, they would not let the media in the church. So I mean, I had to stand out there and. I mean, you know, there was Woody Hayes coming out and Eddie Robinson. And I'll tell you the craziest thing I've ever seen. The night before the funeral, Eddie, is crazy. This is going to sound really crazy, but it was as close to the night before a big game as I've ever. Bill Lumpkin was down there with me. We were staying at the Stafford Hotel. I think that's right. And
you're right.
And we went over to the landing. Now, again, I'm trying to remember. I think it was the landing. And everybody was there. I mean, you talk about Namath on down. Every coach was in there. And, I mean, we sat there near the front of the restaurant, and it was like sitting in the College Football Hall of Fame watching one after another come through.
Well, you're exactly right, Paul. There's quite an array of notable people who were there. My wife and I were in the church. We were in one of the first buses that went to Birmingham.
Right.
And it was just very touching to see the people along the way holding up signs. Thank you, Coach. You know, I get caught up.
No, I mean, listen, it sounds like a couple of old timers waxing poetic, but there had never been, nor has, quite frankly, there ever been anything quite like this.
No, nothing I've ever been around was like it. It was. I don't mean to imply in any way that Coach Bryant and I were personal friends or anything. I doubt quite seriously if he knew my name totally. But in about 20 years, I'd venture to say I'd have missed him with about five practices. So I got to see him quite often, but he was a man's man and a coach's coach. He's just a very special individual.
Eddie, I can't thank you enough for dropping on by today. We will talk to you soon. Eddie Conyers, who just got into the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame, he's 93 or 4, I think. Eddie's connection is that Coach Brian hired him, I think $5 a year to be the official at the practices. And he continues in that job today, the official at the Alabama practices. Reflecting back 40 years ago, we'll move on to some other subjects, of course, as we continue here.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And welcome back here on a Thursday afternoon. It's been a long time since we've talked to this guy. Homer is up next.
Homer. Hey, first off.
Homer, what's happening down there in Louisiana?
Oh, same old, same old. We did get rid of that crappy basketball coach we had.
We've only been there a couple of weeks.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Will Wade.
Oh, Will Wade. No, that was a...
cheater. How did we even get rid of him?
Well, they finally got rid of him, didn't they?
Yes, sir. I was just wondering how.
Well, I think he started to lose a little bit. That helped expedite his departure. And beside that, he violated his contract, I think.
Hey, I warned you. I need to catch up. Congratulations on your induction into the Alabama Communications Hall of Fame.
Well, Homer, thank you. I appreciate you mentioning that.
And I'm very proud for you.
Well,
do you still have Mark and Brahms hanging around?
Well, we still have Brahms hanging around. Mark left a couple of months ago to take another job.
Oh, just like John.
John left. Mark left. John, Mark. Who else do we have? We have Luke. Luke works here. The Apostle Paul is still here.
Gosh, that's true.
We still got most of the regular characters. What about Matthew? Have you seen Matthew lately?
Where did he go?
Matthew's still here.
Oh, okay. He's just hired now.
What about John?
John. Didn't John go to the American?
Oh, John did leave. I have seen John. Yeah, John left. John left to the Athletic. He went to the Athletic.
Oh, yeah, the Athletic. Are you still in touch?
Yeah, I saw John a couple weeks ago. Sure.
Well, go tell him that I asked to bring a member if you see him again.
I will. John's doing great. John's got married and... working. He does a podcast with Brahms.
No way.
No way.
Look, how do I get a podcast?
They do a podcast on soccer. Are you a soccer fan?
Well, I like to follow it, but I still don't know what outside is.
Yeah, it's soccer's a little bit tough to follow if you don't know what you're watching. Hey, thanks for the call. Really good to hear from you, Homer. And John, here's John. This John is from Louisville.
Yeah, one of the apostles. It's good to hear they're staying together like that. Boy, it's been a long time since we heard from Homer. That was a great call.
It was.
And by the way, that was a heartfelt call from Handsome Joe yesterday. He's got my deepest condolences. There isn't anybody more honest or humble on your show than Handsome Joe.
Joe speaks. I was really worried about Joe. I mean, some callers that quit calling John, you're going, okay, this is good. Joe, we really wanted him back.
Yeah, it's good to have him back in the call cycle. I've got a story and a remembrance on Paul Bryant.
Okay.
And by way of background, I grew up in the Chicago area, so we didn't hear much about Paul Bryant when I was a kid. Getting into college football, it was, as you mentioned, Duffy Doherty, Bo Schembecker, Woody, Eric Persijan down Notre Dame, and then even Joe out there at Penn State. But we always knew he was a living legend. We always remembered him by his hat. And when he passed away up north, it just, and you know, reporting was regional back then. So when he died, it just seemed like he died of a broken heart. And that was kind of my remembrance till last year you mentioned you running around looking for a payphone when he passed away.
Right, yeah.
I can't get that out of my head. And then my daughter's saying, why didn't he just use a cell phone? Why is he looking for a payphone? They're not a... I tried.
Well,
to
you know, when you it was funny when you were a reporter back then, you took notice of payphones.
I know.
You always say, okay, there's a payphone right there in case I need it.
It puts a time stamp, Paul, on when he passed away, how long it's been.
Yeah.
When you think about that story from you. So here's the story. And you know, my company, we do different stories from different people to, in our leadership and sales meetings. And one was of Paul Bryant. And that's when, and he has a famous quote from that story, and that's when he was a first-year coach and he was out recruiting in the countryside. He stopped at a restaurant. I'm going to make it quick and get to the quote. And the owner said, you don't have to pay me, but could you give me a picture or some souvenir? And he said, well, I don't have anything, but I'll write it down on a napkin, your name and address, and send you something. Years later, he's down there recruiting in the same area, and he wants this player, but he's going to go to Auburn with his buddies. And so Paul Bear Bryant goes back to the office, and a day or two later, that recruit calls him and says, can I still play for you? And he says, why? And he said, well, my grandpa was really upset when he heard that I had turned you down, and he remembers you back when you left the picture, and he says, you need to play for him. He's the man who could teach you more than football, a guy that keeps his word. And the quote from Bear Bryant on that story was, it don't cost nothing to be nice. It don't cost nothing to do the right thing most of your time or the time. And it cost a lot to lose your good name by breaking your word to someone else.
Mm.
So that tells you a little bit about the person, not just the coach.
No, John, thank you. I know we always tend to maybe inflate people as the years go by, but you don't have to inflate this individual. I mean, there are a lot of coaches who are outstanding, but you would probably have to work pretty hard to inflate their personality. You don't have to do that with Coach Bryant. Bubba is up next.
Hey, Paul. Listen, I want to talk about the saddest day in Bear Bryant's life. A lot of people say Thurman Fisher wrote a story in the Saturday Evening Post about Bear Bryant Wally Butts fixing the Alabama-Georgia game.
Yes.
That's not true. Thurman Fisher did investigative work for it, but Frank Graham Jr. wrote the story. And while Thurman Fisher was investigating, somebody broke into Bear Bryant and Mary Harmon's home and tore it apart. Bear Bryant thought that they were looking for something to connect him with Wally Butts cheating. But anyway, Wally Butts lost his job over the story. He was the athletics director at Georgia, and Bear Bryant was the coach at Alabama. 1962, September 22nd, Bama versus Georgia. It was the opening game of the season, and Bama won 35-0. An insurance salesman named George Burnett claims that he got on a party line with Bear Bryant and Wally Butts fixing the game. He met with the SEC commissioner and Georgia people, and he was trying to solicit funds to tell his story. And they said he was out for money, so he walked out of the meeting and went to the Saturday Evening Post, which paid him for his story. And Frank Graham Jr. wrote it. Make a long story short, Bear Bryant and Wally Butts were awarded by the Supreme Court of the United States. Wally Butts got $3.6 million awarded to him for the libel case, but he only saw $460,000 because the Saturday Evening Post went out of business. Bear Bryant settled out of court on two lawsuits, one on Thurman Fisher's story about brutality that Alabama was supposed to be doing, and one on Thurman Fisher's investigative work on the Supreme Court case. He got $250,000 for that one, and he gave it all to charity. And after the verdict, Thurman Fisher went to Linda Knowles' office and sat down and said he's going to wait to see Bear Bryant. Bear Bryant didn't want anything to do with him, and Linda told him that he didn't have an appointment and Bear Bryant wouldn't even see him. He wouldn't leave. So Bear Bryant walked out the back door and didn't see him. And Linda, when the verdict was announced, Bear Bryant wasn't in his office. He was supposed to be by his phone waiting for the verdict, but it was so sad for him. I mean, he was torn up over this. He walked out of the complex and came back later, and Linda had to tell him that they called him, and the Supreme Court ruled in his favor. Bear Bryant didn't cheer. He didn't holler. He quietly walked his office and closed the door. It was really sad. I just want to let you
Hey, listen, Bubba, that's a fantastic story. And to his final day, whenever he died, Furman Bisher continued his hate. I interviewed him about that incident. We will take a break. Furman Bisher was the most famous writer in Georgia history. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back. And Luke is up next. Hello, Luke.
Hi. I've seen some unofficial reports that Jeremy Pruitt has been cleared by the SEC. I was wondering if you knew anything about this. And if you think it's true, do you think this is the first steps of him coming back to Alabama?
Well, Luke, I think I've seen that out there, so I don't want to play dumb here. I do it enough. I don't know if it's the SEC so much clearing him or it's just Alabama feeling satisfied that whatever happens they can live with. Because ultimately it is the NCAA will have jurisdiction over Jeremy Pruitt, not the NCAA, not the SEC. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about Pruitt being close to Saban being close to hiring Pruitt. I can't tell you if that's any more than you. I don't know any more than you do. Let me put it that way.
All right. And do you have any speculation on who you think will be the next offense coordinator for Alabama?
Luke, I can only report what others have told us, and we've had a number of guests this week, and they all talk a lot about Jeff Lebby as a possibility, even though Cole Kublik threw some cold water on that yesterday. I think Pruitt does seem to be the consensus, though, in terms of the speculation. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out John in Florida. Hello, John.
Paul, thanks for having me on the show. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Thank you.
Yes, just want to call in a little bit about Bear Bryant. First, I knew you were going to be having this discussion today, so my dad played quarterback at Auburn, and I wanted to call to see if he actually played against the Bear, and he said that he played against them all 4 years.
Really?
I think he said two of the years he was there, Bama won the national championship. So my father actually played starting quarterback in 79, and he was there 76, 77, 78. So,
yeah, Bama, Alabama won in 78 and in 79. So you're right.
And a little honor to the Bear as well moving forward. I tried to get on your show yesterday, but you are a very busy man, a popular man, Paul. So, you know, what if moving forward, what if the SEC does go to a pod system? So hear me out real quick, Paul.
Okay.
Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and Kentucky are in the East pod. Alabama, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Tennessee are in the South pod. Mississippi, Mississippi State, LSU, Arkansas in the central pod, and you'd have Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Missouri, essentially the old Big 12, in the western pod. Now, I want to focus on the central, or the south and the east. Everybody in your pod plays, so Tennessee would play Vanderbilt, Auburn, and Alabama, and you'd have one crossover. I think Auburn, Georgia would take priority because that's the oldest rivalry in the south. And then it really just goes to who plays Florida. Will it be Tennessee or will it be Alabama? And this is what I was thinking, Paul. If I'm not mistaken, didn't Bear Bryant win a national championship at Kentucky?
No, he coached at Kentucky, but he never won a national championship there.
Okay, I was thinking. But anyways, I was thinking when this moves forward, Alabama and Kentucky could start a new rivalry. That could be the crossover, and you could essentially call it the Bear Bowl. So kind of wanted to get your idea about that.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.